Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield, to Knightstown to Greensburg. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Decatur County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 16th. It is 7 minutes after nine. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So yesterday was tax day, as it was the deadline to file your taxes or at least try to get an extension. And we had mentioned it yesterday that Suzanne Crouch, your lieutenant governor, tweeted something out. She said, "Today is tax day, Hoosiers. As governor, I'll lead the fight to eliminate the state income tax and you'll save an average of $2,000 each year." Of course, Suzanne Crouch running for governor in the great state of Indiana. And as part of her platform, she is saying that she will axe the tax. Well, that tweet has resulted in a fight.
Feud, we're playing the feud. Two people who totally deserve each other are playing a feud, Casey. Mm-hmm. All right, so our old pal, I'd forgotten this guy was even a person for a while. Our old pal, High Tax Hupfer, Kyle Hupfer, he is the... Now, look, we pick on Holcomb on this show, and we do rightfully so, because Holcomb is totally unqualified to be governor and had no business running a Wendy's, much less a state of 7 million people. But the reality is Kyle Hupfer has largely been in charge of the state of Indiana for the past 7 years. He was Holcomb's right-hand guy when he got elected. He's been state party chair. And so as such, Kyle Hupfer, the tax increases, the growth of government, the cronyism, all of these things have largely been at the foot of Kyle Hupfer because he's been mostly calling the shots. And Brad Chambers decided to run for governor, I was going to say some stuff that you'd be proud of me, Casey, the growth I'm showing. I was about to say some stuff, and then I thought, no, I pledged the audience.
Right, you're going to be positive.
To have a more positive approach. And so I'm just simply giving people's names now.
Okay.
You know, well, I mean, at least for now. when Brad Chambers decided to run for governor, Hupfer left the state party and is now an integral part of Brad Chambers' election machine, which is the most expensive, powerful, connected campaign team probably in the history of the state of Indiana. And what is amazing to me, so Crouch tweets out this thing about axing the tax and blah, blah, blah. And Hupfer, who, by the way, I mean, think about it. He was joined at the hip with Crouch for 7 years. She's the lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. Hupfer and Holcomb are amigos and best pals. And he couldn't sprint to the nearest cellular telephone or laptop computer and just tried to eviscerate her.
Mm-hmm.
Who needs enemies when you got friends like Kyle Hupfer?
So he responded to Suzanne Crouch's tweet about axing the tax, and he said, "You say eliminating the state income tax will be done incrementally, yet now claim this could be the last year Hoosiers have to file it, even though the state legislature hasn't approved such. This is more than misleading voters. It's an out-and-out lie."
Okay, so there's so much going on with this, Casey. First of all, we've got to talk about, and this has been a reoccurring theme for the past 7 years, of how just disrespectful and mean they are, the Holcomb people are, to Suzanne Crouch.
Yeah.
Like, don't kid yourself. The Brad Chambers campaign is Holcomb 2.0. It is the continuation of an attempt to get 8 more years of Holcomb. You look at the people he surrounded himself with. You look at the people that are calling the shots. You look at the way the infrastructure is set up. It is Holcomb 2.0. And this is a reoccurring theme. Remember in 2020, they literally took Suzanne Crouch off the signs. Like, if you look at the Holcomb reelection signs, there's no mention whatsoever of Suzanne Crouch, despite the fact that this woman was totally silent on all the bullcrap Holcomb pulled, whether it was domestic terrorist meet and greets, which we'll talk about that here in a little bit, the tax increases, the mask mandates, the shutting down, no matter what it was, she was the just most loyal, subservient person imaginable, and they treated her like complete garbage, and they are still doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a Suzanne Crouch and Kyle Hupfer were joined at the hip for 7 years. If he wants to disagree with it, that's fine. But they throw this woman under the bus. They back the bus up over her. And you know why they do it, Casey?
Because they know, they can.
Yeah, because they know she's not a fighter. Mm-hmm. Because they know what Suzanne Crouch actually is. And that's why this actually matters. It's hilarious to watch these two total establishment party insiders go at each other. That's funny on the peripheral. But how it affects us is it's telling you what they actually think about Suzanne Crouch. They know Suzanne Crouch. They do this because they know they can verbally abuse her and treat her like a dog, and she will not fight, which tells you when she's governor how she would actually govern. And that's what actually matters to us. That's what we should be paying attention to, which tells you she will not fight for this. She will not actually get the income tax eliminated, and they know it.
Okay, so she says a vote for Suzanne Crouch is a vote to axe the state income tax. And she has said in debates that this is something that's going to happen over time. So for Kyle Hupford to say that it will be done incrementally, yet now she's claiming that this is the last year Hoosiers will have to pay income tax. He's not wrong.
No, he's totally right. But she's a fraud too. The whole thing is highly fraudulent. The whole thing is ridiculous. But, and this is going to be one of our themes for today, is how ridiculous the politicians are and how ridiculous they behave. And they know what she is. She knows what they are, and they formed, and this is what comes back to, you know who you can count on today in today's political climate, Casey? Us. You can count on the Kendall and Casey show, because we don't like any of these people, and we're going to tell you the truth about what's going on. But you're seeing this play out in real time, one, on how unserious she actually is, that she can't even keep her story straight on when she's going to get rid of the income tax. One day it's in a, you know, as you said in a debate, well, it'll be phased in over time. Mm-hmm. But then she's tweeting out as though, hey, if you elect me, this will be the last time you ever have to file an income tax return, which is total bull. She can't even keep her story straight. That's how unserious she is. And they're telling you how unserious she is based on the fact that once again, this lady raised millions of dollars for the Holcomb campaign. Casey, if someone gave me the amount of money that Suzanne Crouch gave Eric Holcomb, I'd go John Wayne Gacy on somebody for that amount of money. And they just treat her like garbage because they know they can get away with it. But it also tells you what sort of scumbag I wasn't going to be mean anymore. It also tells you how uncaring and ungrateful and unloyal the people who surround Eric Holcomb are, that Kyle Hupford would treat someone who is a loyal foot soldier to the governor of the state of Indiana, which Hupford is not only buddies and pals with, but that's essentially how he earns his living based on the success of the party. It shows you what they are too. These people are letting it play out in real time if you'll just look at what they're doing.
Just let them talk and they're going to show you. Here's an interesting idea. We should have Suzanne Crouch back in. I wonder if she would change her grade on Eric Holcomb at this point, because it seemed like they were playing nice. Like, she didn't want to say anything mean. She knows her name is attached to that administration. Hey, look, gloves are off now. Like, they are saying she's a fraud, and it's clear they're not friends.
Yeah, but this is again why, if you elect her governor, nothing's going to change. She's showing you that. She had every opportunity from the opening salvo to come out and go, look, I tried very hard behind the scenes, because as a government person, I've learned that's how things are most effective, and I've tried till my wit's end, and you know what? I'm done with it, and I'm running on my own to fix the things that I could not fix when I was number two, and now I want to be number one, and this guy's a colossal failure, and here's where he's failed, and if you elect me, I promise I will rectify the situation that I could not rectify as the number two. She had every opportunity to run out of the gate with that, and you just said, okay, hey, now we're listening. Now we're paying attention. She has refused this entire campaign to distance herself from Eric Holcomb. She's given him A's in many areas. Mm-hmm. Even the most egregious of stuff, she'll only give him a C, which is the COVID stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet, for all of that, this is how she still gets treated. And I guarantee you, Casey, I guarantee you, she will not respond to this with the appropriate response, because she needs to be liked by these people, and that tells you how she will govern.
It was a big night last night for the WNBA, and that is up next on 93 WIBC.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy. but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I do not think Mellencamp did it again. I think that's the same video people have been playing
recirculating
before. Yeah, people are trying to act like this is some new thing.
We're going to have to look and see if he was wearing the same thing
I think it is the same thing. So this, remember last March or this March, last month?
Yeah.
There you go. When Mellencamp got into it with that guy in the audience
right.
and walked off the stage, for some reason that video is resurfacing. And as though it's some new thing, and we already covered that, and I don't think that's new. I think it's the same one, but people are trying to present it as though it's some breaking thing.
He wouldn't make the same mistake twice, would he?
However, the video, there are now more videos out, and he's wearing what appears to be a mechanics out, mechanics uniform.
Yeah.
And I wonder, that's so unflattering, why he's wearing that.
Well, the onesie. It's,
yeah.
It's a fashion trend right now.
For a guy that's from Seymour?
No, I think it's more for women, though. I've got one, but it's the shorts version.
Seems like one of Kev's German friends would be wearing at a fashion show mm-hmm. somewhere. I don't think a guy who's singing Jack and Diane in Small Town exactly is in the romper onesie business to connect with the audience.
I'm not sure. Did he finish Jack and Diane the last time?
Well, the
we
video,
talked about this?
Well, the video he walked up. I don't know if he came back. My point is, though, I'm seeing all these stories as though they're trying to present it as though it's some new thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same one that we covered a month ago.
I don't know. We're going to have to
it
investigate.
It is. I'm telling
it's
you.
It's the same exact video.
Yeah, thank you.
Is
yes.
It?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to get that out there into the ether that I'm seeing, and I'm seeing like mainstream people
mm-hmm.
commenting on this as though it's some
new breaking story.
New thing.
Okay, so what the deal is Mellencamp, he's doing a show, right? He's talking politics. Somebody in the crowd yells something like, play your songs. We don't want to hear this. But I thought the last time he was telling a story about his grandmother, and this time he's talking about politics. And that's what got the crowd riled up.
Well, no, I think it's the same thing. I just think they, for some reason, and you know how the internet is,
mm-hmm.
that the thing has just, it's just stopped and restarted for some reason, sort of like our YouTube feed just did. And so, you know, hopefully we'll get a better response to our YouTube getting back up and operational than Mellencamp did at that concert.
we're doing 10 less songs on this show today. Isn't that what he said? 10 less songs.
All right, what are we talking about here? I didn't mean to derail the conversation here. I was just pointing out that that was bothering me because, look, Mellencamp deserves whatever he gets. That was totally inappropriate the way mm-hmm. he responded. But we should not dump on a guy again for something that he's not done again.
But what if he did do it again?
I don't
should
think
we dump
he did
on
do
him?
It again, Casey.
Okay. She was the top pick last night. She said she's going to bring it every single night. Of course, we have to talk about Caitlin Clark and the WNBA draft last night. Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah, Casey. I was glued right to the front of my television to watch the inevitable. No, I didn't watch it.
No.
I would love to know what the ratings were for that, though, because she was on. Does she have the lure when she's just simply on TV and not playing basketball? That mm-hmm. would be my question. Is this a ratings juggernaut thing? Everybody knew she was going number one.
Yep, she did.
This is not the NFL draft where it is, you know, every year one of the most watched events in all of sport. She was obviously on the television for a period of time, but were people that interested to know the fait accompli that was about to happen?
I watched it. I watched part of it. First time I've ever watched the WNBA draft. Probably spent more time with the WNBA draft than the NBA draft in years.
Did you watch it while pestering Chuck Pagano at a local drinking establishment somewhere?
No, he wasn't around my living room last night. But this is what it sounded like when she became the number one draft at the WNBA.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
There you go. She was dressed head to toe in Prada. First time that Prada has ever dressed anybody for the draft. And she was wearing all white. Did you see that Governor Holcomb called her?
I did. We got to give Holcomb credit for something, Casey.
Yeah.
And go ahead and mark this down. It's 9/24 on the 16th of April. We do have to give Holcomb credit.
Mm-hmm.
He has dramatically improved over the past couple of years the quality of person he rolls out the red carpet for. I mean, you think about it, in 2020, mm-hmm. he was given the VIP meet and greet to Malik Muhammad, who is now in jail in Portland for attempting to kill cops.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I mean, we have gone from, you know, meet and greets for domestic terrorists to now at least he's up elevated to someone who will actually have a positive impact on the city.
Right. And a positive impact is hopefully what she'll bring, because she already did last night. She's not even here. I mean, there was a big party at Gainbridge and everybody's celebrating it. She's the talk of the town, most likely going to be the toast of the town. What will she bring to the Indiana Fever?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, they have such a good roster, and that's what I'm excited about. Like you said, like, they're a winning franchise. You know, I'm excited to get there. I'm excited to get to Indianapolis. I know there's a lot of people, Aaliyah right here, I know there's a lot of people at Gainbridge tonight supporting us and the picks that we're going to make. So, you know, I know they'll be supporting all summer long. You got to buy your tickets now. I know it'll be a hot ticket, but I think the biggest thing is just do me, have fun, smile. I've loved playing basketball since I was a young girl, and that's not going to change.
So her jersey has already been sold out.
Oh.
Fanatics has reported that all sizes, from extra small to extra, extra large.
Okay, so here is the reality of this, is she is arguably now the most famous person in the city of Indianapolis,
mm-hmm.
instantaneously before she's ever played a game. And she will alter that franchise for at least the next couple of years. It will have an immense, I mean, probably hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact on the city of Indianapolis, on that franchise. And that's all wonderful. However, we live in a world of reasonable expectations. And the expectations now for her are so ridiculously unreasonable. I mean, there's a reason she goes to the Fever, number one, because they're a team that has been bad enough for many years now to be worthy of having the number one draft pick. And I hope that people can have some level of reasonable expectation for this woman, that if you think she's going to be out there scoring 50 points a night and against grown-ass women, which is now what she's playing against, these are not college girls anymore, draining threes from half court every mm-hmm. time she steps across the line, that is not a game of reasonable expectations. And I do worry that when the bar is set so high for someone, even if they perform somewhat well, that people are going to be disappointed or lose interest or whatever. And the reality is the Fever are probably not going to be a championship team next year just because she showed up. They have a very long way to go, and she's never played against grown-ass women before. She's played against college girls.
Well, and to your point, last night after she was drafted, Holly Rowe was asking her what is going to be her goal for the season, and this is what she said.
Man, I think the biggest thing is just be myself and have fun. And if I do that, I think the rest is going to take care of itself.
Okay, I thought you were going to say win, but we'll take that.
Well,
so she's not setting the expectation that she's going to come in and dominate and win.
Well, but it's not whether she's setting it. Mm-hmm. It's whether people are setting it for her.
Right.
And the problem becomes, you know how the sports world is, Casey. They turn on people for ridiculous reasons, and sometimes for no reason at all, because in your mind, you have set this pie in the sky thing of what she's going to do or what an athlete's going to do. And many times in sports, of no fault of the athlete, there could be an injury. The team around them doesn't perform. They don't have the right players around them. There's a whole litany of reasons that could be no fault of her own. She has set the bar is set for her now, where simply being a good player or even a great player is not going to be enough. There are ridiculous expectations around her. And part of me really feels bad for her.
Okay, so we have heard that cicadas are coming, and we've got the assistant professor from the Department of Entomology at Purdue who is going to join us next and answer all questions cicada. That's on the way with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Now, Rob, you probably heard that we are about to be welcoming welcoming a big brood of cicadas, yes. The big bugs.
Yes, Casey, I have heard that, and it scares me to death.
You've had a run-in with cicadas before.
Yes, we detailed on this show the last time these things were a thing. One got in my house. It was an hour-long standoff. It attempted to assassinate me. It then hung up on my fan for over an hour. I sprayed it with bleach, with Lysol, with Pledge, and finally it died a slow and hopefully miserable death.
Okay, well, I don't know if you should be afraid of cicadas or not. And to find out that information, we've got a lady, a woman, a person, an expert.
Yeah, normally say we have a guy, but in this case we have a lady. And her name is Dr. Elizabeth Long, and she is, if anybody could be an expert in cicadas, she would be that. She's an assistant professor from the Department of Entomology at Purdue University. All right, Elizabeth, how afraid should I be of the cicadas this time around?
You should not be afraid. There you should go. Not be afraid because they can't sting or bite, and they're just clumsy.
So that cicada was not trying to kill me a couple years ago. He was just clumsy and had no idea what he was doing.
Exactly.
So they're just big and scary looking.
They are very strange looking, but yeah, they have no defense really. So, yep, they're just coming out to live their short adult life, you know, as amazingly as they can.
Okay, so tell us about this. Why are some years they a thing? Some years they're not a thing? Are they always there and we just don't recognize it? Tell us about the cicadas.
Yes. So, okay. So in answer to the first part of your question, cicadas actually appear every year. Obviously, there's multiple species, just like, you know, there's so many more insects that we could possibly name and imagine. But there is an annual cicada that we see usually, you know, late May, early June, or maybe a little bit later into June every year. And it's a large green and black cicada. You hear them in the summertime. These periodical cicadas, though, they're different because they're much smaller, but importantly, they live a long time, but most of their life is spent underground. So these immatures are underground feeding on trees' roots for 13 years or 17 years, and then they emerge, you know, 13 or 17 years later mm-hmm. as the adult form.
Okay, so these cicadas, they're alive and they're underground right now.
But absolutely.
Okay, we're just not aware of them. So why are they coming up every 13 or 17 years? What is drawing them above ground?
Yeah, so they are, of course, they've evolved. This life strategy or life history strategy works really well for them. The key cues that they're using to kind of wake up or emerge are things like soil moisture, but also soil temperature. And I'm not sure that we understand completely how the insects get this cue and how they all synchronize, right? It's amazing, but somehow they know it's been 13 years, it's been 17 years, it's time. I got to come out and live my life while I can.
All right, Dr. Elizabeth Long is our guest. She's an assistant professor from the Department of Entomology at Purdue University. We're talking about these cicadas. All right, so what, are there two we got to deal with this year? Is that two, they call them broods?
Yes, there are two broods, and the difference between the broods is how long they live underground. So it's a little bit confusing, but brood 19 is actually a 13-year cicada. So they've been underground for 13 years. When they emerge, it'll be 13 years since they last saw the sun, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And then brood 13 is a 17-year brood, so they've been underground even longer.
So wait, 19 is a 13-year, 13 is a 17-year?
That's right. Is it confusing enough?
Whoever labeled these really needs to find a new line of work, because that is very... What do they do underground? Like, what do they just plot on how they're going to get into my house and ruin my day? What do they do for all these years?
They're actually much less troublesome underground. They're just down in the soil, really pretty close to trees' roots, and they're just... Their mouth parts are stuck in there. They have straw-like, piercing, sucking mouth parts, and they're just making a very peaceful, quiet, dark living on plant sap.
Well, what parts of Indiana are we going to get 19 and 13? Everywhere?
Not everywhere. So if you remember back in 2021, that was a huge emergence throughout the state. and this year, it's going to be much more restricted. So we're going to see mostly in the northwest part of the state, and some of the southwestern counties in Indiana have one or a little bit of both broods. And so, for example, brood 19, again, that's the 13-year brood. If you're in Posey County, Warwick County, that's down in the southwest, Newton and Jasper County, I guess I'll just list them all, Lake Porter and LaPorte County, you may see brood 19 emerge there if you're in an area where there's good tree stands, so where there's lots of trees, because obviously that's how they survive. If the trees aren't there, they won't emerge. And brood 13, the 17-year brood, they'll be emerging in fewer counties, mainly in the northwest part of the state. That's LaPorte, Lake, and Porter counties.
So what do we have to worry about here in central Indiana?
Not much, really. I mean, I guess the only thing you might worry about is missing out on this amazing event, the double brood emergence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people are traveling all from all around the country to be part of this.
It's
so
like the eclipse.
It's really a natural wonder.
You've got to be kidding me. Like, this is Eclipse 2.0 where people are driving across the country to see these little boogers?
Yes, I love that. Eclipse 2.0. That's a great way to think about it.
You can use that. We will just take a small percentage of whatever profits you get from that, Elizabeth. By the way, Dr. Elizabeth Long is our guest. She's an assistant professor from the Department of Entomology at Purdue University. Okay, so you said even though this one in 2021 was clearly attempting to take my life, you claim they're not harmful to people. However, what about like animals? What about vegetation? Are these cicadas harmful to anything? Is there anything people should be aware of?
Yes. Yeah, so I always like to tell people that they don't harm you, us adults. They won't harm your kids. They won't harm your pets, although lots of dogs and cats and other animals like to eat them. Apparently, they're delicious.
We went through that. Yeah, Elizabeth, we went through that as well in 2021, where every time my bulldog would go out, he would come back in with one of these things in his mouth.
Right. Apparently, they're delicious. But the good news is, you know, they won't get sick from eating them. I mean, I guess there's always a chance if they eat too many, maybe they get a little too full, but no harm there. The real concern is maybe for folks who have maybe a landscape business or vineyards, a nursery. So any kind of younger woody shrubs or trees that have a stem or a branch diameter is between 3/16 to 7/16 of an inch. Those plants are vulnerable to specifically the females. So they're coming out, of course, for a short time to mate and then lay their eggs. And the females actually lay their eggs in these stems, preferentially in this kind of smaller size. I like to think of it probably about the size of your finger or so. And so she stabs into the branch to lay her eggs, and that can cause significant damage, especially to young trees. So if you planted a young tree in your landscape, you might want to put some netting over it if you're in one of these counties where you know, we're predicting to see an emergence. But that's the main threat that they pose.
So when they come out, how long will they be here, and when can we expect this to begin?
Yes, so they will probably start emerging the last part of May or so and into the beginning of June. Then we're going to really see an increase in their emergence, kind of a bell-shaped curve, and then you'll see things start to taper off again. So all said and done, you'll probably see them for about a month, and then they'll be gone. And the beginning of that, you know, 1 month period, there'll be fewer. It'll peak kind of, you know, right towards the middle of that month, and then towards the end, they'll kind of be gone, and they'll, you know, drop back into the ground and start the process over again.
Okay, so they're not going to die when they come out; they're just going to go back underneath.
Right. So when they emerge, so out of the ground, if you see their little kind of cast shells that they leave behind, like back in 2021, because there were so many of them. They come out of the ground, they're still nymphs, they have to molt, then they get their wings, and that's how you they know they've made it to the adult stage. And then they fly around, they mate, the females will lay the eggs, and little small nymphs will hatch out of those eggs and fall into the ground, and then they'll burrow down, and they'll live down there feeding again on the roots of grass originally, and as they get older, they'll burrow farther and farther down, getting to the tree roots, and they'll be under there for 13 to 17 more years.
All right. Before we let you go, by the way, Dr. Elizabeth Long is our guest. She is everything cicadas, and she's her official title is not everything cicadas, but she knows everything about cicadas. She's an assistant professor from the Department of Entomology at Purdue University. Hey, before we let you go, we got in a discussion the other day about this. It seems like there are far fewer lightning bugs in central Indiana than when I was a kid. Now, I grew up next to a field. That field's now been developed. Am I just imagining this, that there are fewer lightning bugs, or is there actually something to there being fewer lightning bugs because of large-scale development that's taking place in central Indiana? Or you can say, Rob, you're totally full of it.
No, I think you're right. They're just like with many other insects. I mean, we've all probably heard a lot about the bees and the threats that they're facing in our planet or on our planet. It's very much the same for the fireflies or the lightning bugs. things like development, like you mentioned, that removes habitat, you know, that the beetle larvae need to survive before they can emerge as an adult. So in looking at the literature across the world, actually, there's agreement that the species or some species of dragonflies, wrong word, the lightning bugs, are in decline. And so I think we're seeing that again because of the same risks that they face as other insects. So insecticides, habitat loss, light pollution, apparently, which makes sense if you think about it, because they're out at night and they're flashing to communicate. If you're in an area with lots of light or not turning lights off at night, that can make it hard for them to find each other and mate. So that's some of what I see the research is suggesting is contributing to declines in the fireflies.
Just another example, Casey, of how this irresponsible growth is destroying society. Now they've got the lightning bugs.
I can't believe Dr. Long. Rob will be unbearable now because you have proven him right on another topic, this time lightning bugs. That's amazing. Well, we appreciate all of your expertise in regards to the cicadas and all things bugs. And if we have any more bug questions, can we call you in the future?
Of course.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Long. This is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
D. It happened again. This is the fifth time. It's been going on for a year now, and they still said no. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So the Homeland Security Director, Alejandro Mayorkas, has for the fifth time denied Secret Service protection for Robert Kennedy Jr. This came in another letter. It's been going on for a year now. And Mayorkas said, based on the facts and the recommendation of the advisory committee, I have determined that Secret Service protection for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is not warranted at this time.
Isn't that wild? Because so the Republican and Democrat nominee automatically get it, whoever, and they get it because when I did, you know, I interviewed the president one time.
It was a great dream.
That's what he said.
He wished all interviews could be like that.
Thank you for saying that. I know sometimes when I say it, it sounds braggadocious, but those were indeed his words. Trump already had Secret Service protection then, and he wasn't even the Republican nominee technically yet. He was the presumed nominee. So it is pretty wild for them to basically say, well, if you're one of these two major parties, sure, we really care about your life. But if you're Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, while his campaign appears to be certainly sputtering or at the very least not having near the momentum it once did, he's still a guy polling between 8% and 10%. And he's a Kennedy. And if you look at the track record of that family and the terrible things that have been bestowed upon them, I don't think it's probably unreasonable to say, hey, maybe we put two of our least used guards around the guy at all time or whatever. But I mean, they seem dead set on just being like, if you die, I guess you die.
So Real Clear Politics has this race at Donald Trump sitting at 42%, Joe Biden at 40%, and Kennedy in third with 10%,
that seems
like you mentioned.
Yeah, that's probably probably pretty close. Yeah. And I mean, that's ridiculous to say, hey, look, is the guy going to win? No. Is he going to win many electoral votes? Probably not. But he's certainly a guy who will have the ability to have an impact on the race. He's a legitimate candidate. He's a mainstream candidate. He claims he's going to be on the ballot pretty much in all 50 states. So the idea that you're not affording him the same thing the other two parties are getting, that should be a little concerning to people.
Okay, so now Trump and Biden's teams are both trying to brand Kennedy as a dangerous conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Saying there's never been a conspiracy he doesn't like.
Well, but look, Kennedy is dangerous, but I don't think it's because he's a conspiracy theorist. He's dangerous because he's on record as saying he wants to put people in jail who don't agree with his lunatic environmental views.
So the Biden campaign said that he thinks that Wi-Fi gives you cancer, the chemicals in the water and in fish turn kids gay and transgender.
Oh,
So. Well,
those are some strong ones you'll have to respond to. But hey, look, all the things the government lies to, isn't it the height of arrogance for all the lying that the government does, which Joe Biden oversees? And Joe Biden has been a senator. Joe Biden once had an entire presidential campaign derailed because of his lying and cheating. And he has the audacity to talk about anybody's problems potentially with the truth.
And the Republicans are calling him a radical left nut job, which is interesting.
That's probably accurate.
Because Robert Kennedy Jr. tweeted out yesterday that he alluded to the fact that Trump's people asked him to be his vice president at one point.
Do you believe this?
I don't know. Okay, so the tweet says, President Trump calls me an ultra left radical. I'm so liberal that his emissaries asked me to be his VP. I respectfully declined the offer.
Yeah, but I think Trump might have asked him even if he did think he was an ultra-left person, because Trump always defaults to what's best for Trump. And I could totally see that there was a moment in time where they reached out to him. Now, was it some sort of formal offer? Was there pricking the hand and in the getting the blood? No. Mm-hmm. Was it some mafia moment? No. But I totally think they probably reached out to him and said, what would that look like for you?
Could have been a soft launch.
Sure.
What do you think? Can we get along?
Nah. Can we talk about the mail that's coming to my house when we come back?
Sure.
Because it's really, 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 really. Well, we'll talk about it when we come back.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Bright girl, do you remember when we used to sing? Sha-la-la.